I be playing.
Good morning and welcome again to Skybox on 90.7 in Capstone. I'm Mark Mayfield, editorial advisor at the Office of Student Media here at the University of Alabama. And with me, as always, are co-host Dr. George Brown, executive director of University Recreation, and Dr. Adam Sterrett, assistant vice president for student affairs. We've got an hour-long show, and I'm not sure that's enough today. It's week 7 in the college football season, and we've already had enough news breaking this week to last a couple of seasons. And of course, the main event for all of us today is Bama's big game with Texas A&M in College Station. We'll break down that game along with the other major games in the SEC and around the nation here in just a while. We've also got a couple of great guests with us, beginning with Ken Gaddy, director of the outstanding Paul W. Bryant Museum here on campus and the absolute best person we could possibly have in the studio with us when it comes to Alabama football history. Ken's here today to talk with us about Alabama's very strong ties to Texas A&M over the years. Also joining us as our guest picker today is Sean Landry, the editor-in-chief of the Crimson White, the student newspaper here on campus, and a guy who regularly covers Crimson Tide sports. We'll see if Sean can do any better than the rest of us at picking what's a very tough slate of games today. So, George, here we are again.
Here we are. Happy Saturday, Adam.
Happy Saturday, George.
Well, you know what? I think we're all excited about the game. We'll talk more about the Alabama-Texas A&M game tipping and kicking off here in about a couple hours here in College Station. But, you know, there is a couple of big games, and I'm keeping my game day is, and I think the rest of the nation, to see which one wins the Mitt, Michigan State and Michigan. That game is jumping off the page. You know, Michigan State is the higher-ranked team but is a decided underdog at home. I'm finding that interesting. A lot of love for Harbaugh. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I think that game's really interesting. You know, the press is really beating up Michigan State and wondering if they're a pretender at this point or not. They're really, at the time, huge win over Oregon. Now doesn't look like much after Oregon's really gone in the tank after the last few games. And since then, Michigan has really come out with a huge defense and a relatively impressive offense. And so that game really looks a lot different than it did week 2-3 for sure. It's a big week in the Big Ten, right? So you've got Iowa at Northwestern.
Right.
You've got Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State.
Right.
Another big week in the Big Ten to see who's going to be there towards the end of the season.
Yeah. Mark, in the SEC, I was a little surprised that CBS picked our game up over Florida and LSU, two undefeated teams.
Yeah, true. Absolutely. I think it is a big game with Florida and LSU, even bigger now. Well, it's been big, but without Florida's QB, we'll talk about that in a while. But Florida's going in there with their hands tied behind their back a little bit. But that's a huge game. But I think they also view that Bama A&M as just a major game that's going to affect all of college football in the rankings.
Right, right. You know, Alabama draws, and, of course, Alabama – we'll talk more about the game, but Alabama is – early in the week, I know Alabama was getting as many as 4 points. I don't know if the line – I haven't checked it recently, but today I think it's still around 3 or 4 points. You know, being a road favorite is interesting. You know, Adam, you mentioned there's two games I'd like to quickly allude to, Iowa at Northwestern and Oklahoma at Kansas State. This is what I call redemption games for Northwestern and Oklahoma, and even Kansas State to some degree. I want to believe that Northwestern shows up, and that could be a really good game, a big game for both those teams. Oklahoma and Kansas State, which Oklahoma team shows up?
Absolutely. Somebody's got to win the Big 12, right? And
right.
So,
yeah.
And somebody's got to hopefully try to contend with TCU or Baylor or one of those other teams that's scoring all those points. And we thought it was going to be Oklahoma, but after a stumble last week and after a tough game against Tennessee, maybe they're not as good as we thought they were. And I think both Northwestern and Ohio State are wearing some type of black uniform this week. So something to be watched, of course, with the silly uniform discussion again this week. So we'll see if their uniform mojo works for them or not.
I just hope Northwestern shows up this week after
that
god-awful game against Michigan. Well, we've got more to talk about. Ole Miss is in Memphis in what's a big game, but – It's, you know, it's that time of year, and it's all about Bama and Texas A&M, 2:30 this afternoon. And, you know, it's a good time to look back at the very close and important relationship the Crimson Tide has had with the Aggies over the year, including, of course, the fact that Coach Bryant and Stallings came from A&M, very successful tenures at A&M, and former Bama player Jackie Sherrill, who was a guest on one of our earlier shows a few weeks ago, also coached there. So with no further ado, it's a pleasure to have Ken Gaddy, director of the Bryant Museum, here to discuss all of this with us. Ken, thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's a great day to be here.
It is. It's a Saturday, and it's Alabama football, and I suspect every day, every week is big at the Bryant Museum.
You know, we get to talk Alabama football and get paid for it, so that makes it a good job to have.
I want your job.
You know, we're looking at Sports Illustrated. This is work. You know, so, but it's a fun place to be, and a lot of times we don't have to say anything. People just listen to people to tell their Alabama stories, their Alabama experience, and that makes it fun.
Talk a little bit about how the Bryant Museum came to be. As a curator, I guess, and director, tell us a little bit about the history of the Bryant Museum.
Well, the original idea actually came from Coach Bryant. He wanted all his players and coaches, as he was coming up on 315, which was then the record for most career victories, he wanted all their names and their photos in one place. And he talked to Sang Lida, who was the manager, the trainer at the time, get those photos together, get those names together, and As Sang talked to other people, he said, hey, we can do more than that, Coach. And then the museum grew out of that from being just those teams to start with the first team in 1892 through today. And then we added the collection side to it. So all the old game films, photographs, all those other materials started being collected at the museum too. So it turned into a true museum in a fairly short period of time evolving there. Coach Bryant passes away in the middle of all that. They kind of reorganized. And it actually opened up October the 8th, 1988.
Hmm. Okay.
That's great.
That was great. 1 year after I got here, guys.
Well, that's, you know, I was a student here when Coach Bryant was here and actually got to interview him a few times as sports editor of the Crimson White and then editor of the Crimson White, which looking back on it, we're just so lucky to be here at that time. But the museum really did tie everything together here. There was nothing like that. You know, at the time, and it's interesting that Coach Bryant was the one who really wanted to have that in a place people could go. And so I think it's a real gem here on campus. And for anybody who hadn't been there, it's they need to get there quickly. Before we get into A&M, the A&M talk, Ken, what are the hours of the Bryant Museum?
We're open 7 days a week, 9 until 4, closed major holidays. So we're open almost every day of the year. The weekends are a great time. That's when people are off. You got family and friends, I'm out of town. You know, I tell students all the time, hey, you can't take your dad to the strip, but you can bring him to the museum on Saturday.
Yeah.
So we want to be a place that students and faculty staff think to bring when they have people to entertain. And, of course, they can come by. We got a lot of students yesterday.
Yeah. You also do great videos over there. That one with the crystal trophies was amazing.
Those are a lot of fun. We've got a new one out now. If you'll go to BryantMuseum.com, there was a poem that Coach Bryant kept in his pocket, A New Day, and we got some of the former players to read parts of that. So those are fun to do.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's talk a little bit about this A&M game. You know, the history, you know, is and which is the – clearly what you deal in as well at the Bryant Museum, the history of A&M and Bama is a really strong history, isn't it?
Yeah, there's close ties, obviously, with Coach Bryant coaching at Texas A&M, and then later Stallings was a player for Coach Bryant. When Coach Bryant came to Alabama, most of his staff came with him. So there's big, big, strong connections between those two teams. You know, John David Crow was the only – Heisman Trophy winner Coach Bryant had, and he donated his Heisman Trophy to the Bryant Museum. We have it on display right now. His son played for Coach Bryant here at Alabama, so those ties are really, really strong between the two schools.
Yeah. Does it make it you know, it seems to me like Coach Stallings, I know, it seems always has a little dilemma when Bama's playing Texas A&M because it's his heart's in both places, I guess. Do you detect that as well from Coach Stallings and just also from just some Bama fans who have a lot of respect for A&M?
Oh, I think Coach Stallings definitely has that conflict in his mind. I think he probably would never say out loud, but he probably leans to Texas A&M because that's where he played.
Right.
He's been on the board and other things out there, but, you know, he's such strong ties here. You know, the Stalling Center is right over our shoulder here. So his ties here are very strong.
Yeah. Well, Coach Bryant, as you mentioned, you know, having, of course, come from there and play and done really well there, of course, as coach before he came to Alabama and when Mama called, as he used to say.
Right.
But do you get a lot of people in the coming through the museum to sort of, you know, obviously they come to see the history with Coach Bryant and the history of Alabama football, but how does A&M come up very often in terms of what people search? Because I know you also have researchers in there from time to time.
Right,
as well.
Yeah, and that relationship is a positive relationship. We haven't really played them enough to have that rivalry situation like playing Auburn or LSU, those kind of things. So it's more like the Penn State type of atmosphere. Still, you know, that mutual respect there. And, yeah, there's a big, strong tie. Like I said, there's a lot of the coaches came over, so there was that connection through the years. So it was a big, strong connection. I think it's a very positive connection.
Yeah, my sense is that having lived in Austin and gone to school in San Antonio, I have a little bit of an understanding of how important Texas football is. And I think it's there's a respect because – how important football is in the state of Alabama. And I think the two schools are sort of very aligned with one another because of that. And I think that football is a common denominator. Although, I think, Ken, from your research, they haven't played that often.
They really have. They only played seven times.
Right.
So that's not a long history there. And, of course, we haven't mentioned the Junction Boys. That's one of the great storylines in college football history, period. And for Coach Bryant, Texas A&M to be involved in that, I think that's, you know, that's one of the major stories. If you're going to talk about college football, you can't talk very long without getting the Junction Boys.
Yeah, what was the thing? They went down there with two buses and came back with one?
That's one of Stalin's lines. And he's one of the great historians, if you will, of that event. But, going out in two and coming back in one. He also told a great story about they would go into town every once in a while and on the bus and – he said he never wanted to quit, but he did want to die. He said he said they came past this lake, and he wanted that bus just to brakes to fail and run out in that water, so he'd have a way out.
Golly.
Yeah, those were different times, weren't they?
Yeah, I tell you what, there's nothing like listening to Gene Stallings. I mean, it evokes to me you close your eyes and you think you're listening to Coach Bryant.
Yeah, he's got that voice that really is such a great voice.
Yeah. He's and he's, you know, he is a person who is so important to A&M football and to Alabama football that it's a really great thing that both programs have him, you know, and he was so successful at both places. And of course, the Cotton Bowl when he played Coach Bryant.
That's right. So that was the 67th season, so January 1, 68. Stallings actually beat Coach Bryant.
Right.
And Coach Bryant runs out and picks him up and I guess attempts to carry him off the field. He didn't get too far, but you'll see those great photos of Coach Bryant lifting Coach Stallings off his feet and Stallings with that big smile on his face.
Yep. Well, now, of course, Bama is going to be playing and has been now in the last few years playing A&M again after not playing them much. But now that A&M's in the SEC, you think that seems like it would strengthen the ties as well?
Yeah, I think that'll build that rivalry. You know, now it's, you know, I think it's more of that fun game a little bit. But, you know, after they beat you a couple of times, it changes things.
Yeah,
not so fun when you lose.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But it's been fairly balanced since they came back. Again, back to the Junction Boys, when that first game here in Tuscaloosa, Paul Bryant Jr. invited all those players back. They had a big reception at the museum, so that's one of my great memories is having all those guys at the museum Friday night before the game. Of course, we lose the next day, but to see those guys back in one place was a very special thing.
That was Johnny Manziel, right?
Yeah.
I don't think A&M beat us so much as that phenomenal effort on his part.
Yeah, one of those fluke plays, I guess you say, you know, that people remember in that game really made a big difference in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, that one where the ball pops up, he grabs
it, scrambles out of the pocket. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And amazing. That was an incredible game.
Great football game. Alabama showed a lot of grit coming back in that game after being down big early.
Yeah. And, of course, another game we can't forget is the Hurricane game.
That's
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
Bill Curry, right?
Yeah.
That's right. That was a rescheduled game, right?
That's right. So we Bill Curry decided we couldn't go, probably for right reasons. So safety reasons. And, you know, Texas A&M wasn't very happy about that. Because I think the sun was shining actually
that day.
On the day of the game. But you got to make a decision on Wednesday or Thursday not to go. So, you know, he made that tough decision. And we all made those decisions at work. Hey, we make you look bad when the weather changes some. But, yeah, that was a big part of his history also.
Yeah.
As I recall, though, Bama went back out there, probably motivated a little bit by some of the A&M comments, right? That
why didn't you show up?
And and Bama really, I think, beat him fairly bad.
Yeah, I think it was 30-10, so it was a pretty straightforward, easy victory, if you will, in the long run.
Yeah, yeah. Motivation's an incredible thing. I mean, you know, although they would have beaten him anyway, I think. But certainly the comments out of College Station probably had a little something to do with that. So the rivalry is, I mean, it was there then, but again, it's been great, strong ties. But there is that, you know, it is football after all.
Well, and, you know, one that comes to mind to me fairly recently is that the famous or infamous Dennis Franchione, where he left somewhat in the middle of the night and went to College Station, never came back.
Yeah. It may not have been dark, but it was in the middle of the night type of move. take the plane and, head out of town and you know, Franchione is not a positive name to use in the Alabama circles. We have him in the museum because of the players. He may be the best, the type of coach who could have coached a team by himself. He was such a good organizer. Mm-hmm. His practices were wide open. In some ways, he changed how people do practice in the way that he organized practices. But, you know, I don't think he was very happy here in Tuscaloosa. Probably his family wasn't. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I say this all the time, if you don't want to be here, go.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Last year at the beginning of the season, looking at the Texas A&M game coming here, you know, they came out really strong last year, blew out South Carolina, I think, on early Thursday night, and we were all fearing that game.
Yeah.
By the time the game came around, it turned out that Texas A&M wasn't as strong last year. I feel like this year it may be the opposite, that we maybe didn't have that game circled early on. We had Georgia circled. We had Tennessee circled. Maybe Mississippi State, Ole Miss. But now that the game's here upon us, it looks like that game in College Station is going to be pretty big today. They're a tough team this year. What do you see this afternoon?
Yeah, I think it's not the same team, obviously. They got their quarterback situation under control. I think that's the biggest difference in their team from last year to this year. They're going to score points. You know, you got to assume that when you play them. So, but I have this calm when it comes to our defense.
Mm-hmm.
When we play, I have so much confidence in them now after what they've done this year that I think our defense will rule the day.
You think we'll have a bit of a shootout on our hands with their quarterback and our defense?
I think they'll score, you know, 21 or something like that. Their offense will score. You know, if we can hold down the other points, you know, just like the Ole Miss game, you know, turnovers, over the key there, and they got points off of other situations. Even Arkansas, you know, that touchdown is you know, off a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So a turnover and a penalty mixed in there helps them out. So. Yeah, I think, you know, they have the offense to score, but, again, our defense just makes me very calm when they're on the field.
Ken, you know, we've talked and the role of Coach Bryant, the Bryant Museum, and obviously the name is Bryant Museum, but where's the Saban legacy going to go in the Bryant Museum? How will that be treated?
You know, I have a press ask me all the time, I guess they're trying to set me up. They'll say, well, what if, you know, if Saban wins more national championships than Bryant? And I say, well, let's try it. Let's do it.
So it's a tough problem to have.
That's right. That's right. So that's my answer is that's the problem we want to have. I mean, we're Alabama, and, you know, we've had Coach Bryant, we've had Coach Thomas, we had Coach Stallings, we have Saban, and we'll have somebody else. I mean, we're going to be Alabama for a long time, and I think that, you know, worries other teams to think about that.
Yeah, I think that's called a good problem to have, guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No question about that.
Let's root for a Saban Museum or just more great success. Hey, Ken, thanks. We appreciate you being here and encourage anyone who's never visited the Bryant Museum to get there as fast as you can. It is one of the great destination things in Tuscaloosa, and I agree with you completely. It's an outstanding experience that you won't forget. And let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Sean Landry, our guest picker today. You're listening to Skybox on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Skybox and 90.7 The Capstone. Our fearless guest picker today is Sean Landry, editor-in-chief of the Crimson White and a beat reporter here on Crimson Tide Football. Sean, thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to be here, gentlemen.
Well, we've got some exciting games today. Let's get right to it. Let's start out with your guest picks here with a big matchup in the Big Ten, Iowa at Northwestern.
It's a tough one, basically a pick 'em in Vegas. I'm going to take Northwestern over Iowa.
Okay, even though they're wearing some kind of special black jerseys, you're going to still go with Northwestern.
Yeah, I'm not big on the special jerseys.
Black jerseys,
kind,
purple so. Pants. I'm going to go with purple pants.
Yeah, I was living in Georgia during the Alabama blackout game over there, so that sort of ruined the magic of the alternate uniform for
Mark
me.
Mark Richt is a nice guy, though, isn't he?
He's a good man.
As of today, he's still a nice guy.
He is a nice guy.
Over here with Dr. Brown's homer pick here, Ole Miss at Memphis.
This is another tough one. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the favorite Ole Miss here, but I think it's going to be closer than people are giving it credit for. I'm taking a 4-point game for Ole Miss.
Okay. Wow. Okay. The big game here in Tuscaloosa, out there in College Station. It's big here in Tuscaloosa, but it's actually in College Station. Our Alabama Crimson Tide at Texas A&M.
I think Alabama handles this one, actually. I think Texas A&M has made some strides in terms of its defense, but if Alabama's offensive line can hold up, I think that the Crimson Tide's going to take it. I've got it 42-14.
Ooh. Wow.
42-14.
The fact that he
that's fearless.
That's fearless
that is
to how
fearless,
far you
the
went
score.
With it.
That's big.
Whether you picked right or not, I'm with you, but wow, that score is fearless.
So why do you think the margin's going to be that
yeah.
big?
I think that Alabama's defense has been – primed to deal specifically with Texas A&M style offenses. They're playing more physical on the edge. They're playing more physical with guys in space. So I think that they'll be able to sort of do some things against that offense that they haven't been able to do in the past. And if the offensive line responds like I think it's going to, then Alabama should be able to move the ball fairly well on the back of Henry because they have a size advantage. The issue is just protecting the edges, which they weren't able to do very well against Arkansas. But Ryan Kelly and the other guys that we talked to were seemed fairly motivated to make sure that they weren't giving up those sacks and those tackles for a loss for two straight weeks.
Gosh, nice I'd like analysis. To see us score 42, right?
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm all about it.
Two wounded programs here, Oklahoma at Kansas State. Two tough losses to different level teams last week.
I'm going to go with the Bill Snyder family on this one. I think Oklahoma's still
nice
reeling.
Nice pick, my friend. Nice pick.
I think they're still reeling from losing to Charlie Strong in Texas last week, and I think K-State is actually kind of going to build a little momentum after taking TCU right down to the wire. So I've got K-State by a touchdown.
I think your fellow Crimson White writer Kelly Ward's had an effect on you. Kelly is a K-State person. She goes to school here, of course, but huge K-State fan,
huge.
Bill Snyder fan. All right.
So Michigan State at Michigan back in the Big Ten. Huge game for the Big Ten.
I've been surprised with what Michigan's been doing under Harbaugh, but I think that Michigan State is still – I don't think they're getting enough credit. I think Michigan's getting a little more name recognition right now, so I'm taking Michigan State by a touchdown.
Wow.
All right, you're taking Sparty over Mayfield's beloved khaki.
That's right, absolutely.
So here's your guest pick game of the week. Really a barn burner. I'm surprised this is not the primetime ABC game, quite frankly. The Vanderbilt Commodores – at the South Carolina Gamecocks, a ratings record for this game. I don't know if there's a Super Bowl.
This
or...
portion of the broadcast was brought to you by sarcasm.
So, Vandy at USC, who do you have here? Big news here in USC this week.
Yeah, I think that that's sort of the appeal of this one. Nobody really knows what to expect from SC with Spurrier just up and leaving. So, I'm going to take Vanderbilt over SC. I don't think they'll be able to bounce back from losing their coach with 3 days' notice.
That's
fearless. I think that's fearless anytime you pick Vanderbilt.
South
no
Carolina
doubt.
Takes a mulligan
no
on this one.
It.
Anything other than Scholar Bowl.
All right, the Florida Gators amateur football team at LSU Purple and Gold. Who do you have here? Another big news game of the week here.
Yeah.
I think the obvious pick is LSU. They're facing their fourth straight backup quarterback, and Florida's, for their vaunted defense, will be able to stop Leonard Fournette.
Now, does the quarterback change the pick for you? Do you pick LSU even if they have Greer?
No, I think I still pick LSU, but it's clear now that it's LSU.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think the Greer thing just makes it move already because it playing in Death Valley is – and it's a night game. Well, 6 o'clock it is. USC, Notre Dame, more turmoil. USC earlier in the week, Sarkisian being dismissed and that. Any measurable effect being in Indy as far as the way this game goes?
I don't think that they'll be able to – it's going to be tough for a program to overcome that kind of turmoil on the road with no support from a home crowd or anything like that. And Notre Dame has been impressive at points this season, so I'm taking the Irish here.
Yeah, guys, I think USC is a lost ship right now. I really do. Missouri and Georgia. Last year, I recall, Georgia went to Missouri and destroyed them.
They did.
Up there. So does Missouri get payback in Athens? I mean, what kind of team is showing up for the Bulldogs?
Even with Chubb out, it's going to be tough for a Mizzou team that's looked fairly impotent at times to move the ball at night in that stadium, in Sanford Stadium. I'm taking Georgia by a touchdown. I think that Lambert can still do some things. It's unfair to judge him based on playing maybe the best defensive front in the country in those conditions. And their backup running back is still a great player, and that wide receiver Mitchell is always a force to be reckoned with.
They're good. They've got talent. Penn State, Ohio State. This is a good Big Ten game in Columbus. What do you think?
Ohio State is still holding on to that to a lot of points in these games. It's a 16-point spread, I think, for Ohio State. I think the Buckeyes take it, but I'm giving them only 10 points. I'm calling it 31-21.
Also wearing black jerseys, by the way.
Are they?
Also in black jerseys.
Also in black jerseys.
And Penn State will have really boring helmets.
They will. They will.
No doubt.
There you go. Arizona State at Utah, the late ESPN game. Is this a trap game for Utah?
It could be. Arizona State's done some things, but I think Utah probably deserves to be number one in the country.
Wow.
And I think that as long as they're not, they've got some motivation there. So I'm taking Utah by 14.
All right.
I'm looking at his picks. They're good. I mean, is he fearless? I mean, Michigan State on the road, Michigan, I think that could be fearless.
Yeah. I think Michigan's a couple of points favored in that game, right?
Yeah.
They are.
If he's going to actually watch the Vandy-USC game.
That may be the one that's jumping off the page.
I am afraid to watch it. I think that's where the fear may come in.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to come in with that game. That's a good one. Hey, Sean, tell us a little bit about what's going on, the Crimson White. And I know you moved from sports editor to editor-in-chief. Talk a little bit about your role now with that.
Well, I've gone from being really hands-on as the assistant sports editor, covering football and basketball and gymnastics for the CW, to a much more big-picture role. And it's been an exciting challenge, working to steer the organization in a new direction, working with a lot of people to sort of understand the difference between what we have been doing in the past and what we will be doing in the future. Trying to develop, build on the impressive legacy of the Crimson White as one of the top student media organizations in the country, and develop sort of our own part of that legacy as we go into a new era at the CW.
Yeah. You've done a great job, Sean, with moving it into the 21st century, the digital age, really. And I know that's not easy, you know, to get people reoriented away from print, so to speak, to really pushing them to be a 24/7 media operation, basically.
It's tough, especially with student journalists who have a lot to worry about. The new sort of model for journalism is 24/7, 365 information source that we seek to be requires a lot of commitment, and I'm very pleased with the commitment that the staff has shown to that.
That's great.
That's great, Sean. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to have you with us. I know with class and all your commitments here, you've been really busy, so thank you so much. We'll see how your picks stack up with ours after today's game. We'll talk about you when you're off air, of course. And now let's take a short break, and we'll be back to discuss some of the crazy news we've had this week in college football, and also take a look at how we did on our picks last week. And, of course, we'll make our fearsome picks for today. You're listening to Skybox on 90.7 The Capstone. Please come back with us.
Hey, this is Will Gamble, and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Skybox on 90.7 The Capstone. Well, the sky hasn't exactly fallen yet, but I'm guessing there's some people out there predicting it will after this week's news. George, after a strange week of picks last week and lots of upsets for our own picks, and then all the news that's come out this week.
Yeah, we you know, as far as the week went, Mark and I went 12-4. Adam, you went 11-5, and I think, as you noted on Twitter, you know, go fearless or go home.
Yeah, I kind of went home, right? I went out on a limb. And
you went out on a limb on Nebraska. I think that was the one that was a little bit different, but and Cal.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still had a strong showing. Overall, 80-28. Adam, you're currently 78-30, two games back, and Mark 77-31. You know, guys, when you look at percentages, we're all doing pretty darn well.
Yeah, still pretty close.
Yeah, very, very close going into week seven. As far as our guest picker, a quick reminder there, Rosalind Moore was as fearless as anyone we've ever had.
Absolutely.
She showed a respectable 7-4. Myself and Mark were 7-4, and Adam, you were 6-5 on the guest pick. Oof. So
7-4 seems to be about the number for a guest pick.
We've had we've had 1-8-3 that was quite impressive.
You could say we're kind of the Mark Richt of
and we look pretty good.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah.
We're nice people too.
We are nice.
Yeah, you know, as far but as
7-4.
Yeah, it's a nice guy. 7-4.
7-4, right. Nice guy.
Very Richtian.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, the week started with a bang, and you know, here we are Saturday. But boy, what a start we had with Sarkisian's departure and firing on Monday night, and then later that night we had Steve Spurrier resigning just in midstream. And then Will Greer, as we talked about, from Florida and the upheaval there. Quite a week in college football, and it may make an impact. It could make an impact on a couple of the games coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for a Monday without any games, it was one of the busiest college football news days, certainly of the year. And with Coach Spurrier retiring in the middle of the season, that's pretty rare if it's not an illness or not a scandal like, say, Sarkisian. And and I think we all agree that the old ball coach was just done, right? He was just done and tired of losing and wanted to play golf.
Tee time was calling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how history treats that, Mark, when someone leaves in midseason, a 2-4 midseason at that.
Right. Right. I think that's a you know, you could say that's kind of the only blemish on his really great record in college football, the fact that he chose to leave them. But obviously there's something there we don't know, and whether it is medical or something else. But, you know, he's not saying. But I think he's had a great career. And
absolutely,
I think overall he's going to be remembered for building Florida's program especially, but also winning at South Carolina, where it's really tough to win.
Absolutely.
He's done really well there. And what I'm going to miss most is just his quips, you know, his little digs at other teams.
Absolutely.
Remember at Florida, his digs at Georgia, his digs at Tennessee, all those things.
So I say all the time, he was a hated rival for me when he was at Florida, but I really, really enjoy him making fun of Clemson all the time. I think that's just one of the great joys of college football is him taking shots at Dabo Sweeney. So I'll miss that for sure.
Oh, no doubt.
Does he rise to the Mount Rushmore of coaches? You know, is his legacy with Florida and then later with South Carolina put him in that top echelon of coaches?
That's a great question.
I
think if he had stayed at Florida,
yeah,
I would say absolutely. I think because he did leave to go coach pro and then he came back to South Carolina. Well, he was at Duke too before Florida, right? But then came back to coach South Carolina. I don't know. It's a really good question. I'm not sure he rises to the top, sort of top five. I don't know. That could be argued, but he's in there. There's no question he's in there.
I like to remind people that he won one national championship at Florida. He didn't win 3, 4, 5.
That's
true.
He didn't
win 2. I also happen to be a Washington Redskins fan, and so I had to deal with him going from Florida and you know, helping to ruin that professional football team, which is still in shambles. It certainly wasn't only his fault, but he kind of quit there in the middle of the night, quite frankly, came back to college football coaching. But certainly on the characters of Mount Rushmore, he's one of the greatest characters we've had in college football ever,
And I guess his legacy really is SEC more than national.
Absolutely.
I think that's sort of, You know, he won a lot of SEC titles, and I think that's really his. But, you know, again, he chose to leave a program that he was in control of. As you said, Adam, though, they only did win one national title while he was at Florida.
I've got some issues with that, but we won't go into that now.
Yeah.
The events, I think, are sad, actually, out in Southern California with Steve Sarkisian. I mean, you know,
absolutely
take or leave, you know, due diligence on the part of Pat Hayden, and now there's a lot of speculation about maybe his job or his role with the College Football Playoff Committee. That's a mess out there.
I agree. I feel bad for him as well. Clearly somebody with a real alcohol problem that clearly has been around for a while, and so I think that's a real issue, but also the program is a mess. Related to that, and clearly other issues, because you got to question the athletic director out there and what this is going to mean for him. And he's had a couple other strange issues since being AD out there and being on the field and the sideline. And so I think they're a mess again. I also think about Ed Orgeron, right? He got ran off last year and really was doing a great job and had the team behind him. And now, you know, he's gone, right?
Now it's a mess. And I think, you know, Pat Hayden's gotten a pass to some degree because he stepped in for Garrett and did – you know, and did a pretty good job. But now I think people are really questioning his decision-making regarding Sarkisian, particularly when they had that alumni event a couple months ago and apparently didn't make sure he got the right help at that point. So,
and we all know there is an elaborate vetting process with these coaches, right? And so if all these stories are now coming out from Washington and everywhere else, then, you know, you've got to believe that some of those stories were around before last week, before the beginning of the season, during that alumni event.
No doubt.
Yep.
No doubt.
You ready to get fearless?
Let's get there.
All right. Yeah. Let's start it right off. Let's get rolling with some of the morning games. Tulsa, East Carolina, maybe not a marquee game, but a very close game. Guys, I'm going to start it out. I think the Pirates are pretty good. I know beating Virginia Tech doesn't mean everything, but I'm going to take them over the Golden Hurricane.
I agree. I think this is a really tough pick, but I think the ECU Pirates pull it out as well. Tulsa really hasn't played much so far this year.
Yeah, I'm with East Carolina. You know, they had a really close game at Florida. They almost beat BYU. Yep. This is a good football
team. Yeah, they are.
I think they win this one.
I like this game in the morning on ESPN2. Iowa Northwestern, mentioned it earlier. I was all in on Coach Fitzgerald on the defense. Michigan made him look silly. I think they redeemed themselves. I'm not convinced. Iowa may be the worst undefeated team in college football. I'm going to go with the Huskies at home in Chicago, in Evanston.
I agree, George. I think Northwestern and comes back this week, plays big defense, holds the Iowa offense down to very few points, and pulls this one out.
I'm going fearless, guys. I'm going with Iowa. I'm saying they're going to – I think this is Kurt Ferentz somehow has found some kind of magic potion this year, and I don't know how, but I think it's. I think they somehow find a way to beat Northwestern and keep their undefeated season
going.
I'm going with the corn, absolutely.
Intriguing morning matchup over in Memphis, Tennessee. My hometown, Ole Miss at Memphis. Too much Rebels, but a lot of points on the board. What do you think?
I agree. I think it's a shootout, and I think Ole Miss wins by a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, I think I'm going with Ole Miss on this. Memphis, how many games have they won in a row? 12?
I think it's 12.
Like that.
Yeah.
But I think it ends there. I think Ole Miss just got too much for them.
Yeah. Louisville, Florida State. Adam, this is your team. Is Louisville a threat to the Noles?
You know, I thought Louisville would be a much better team this year, and I thought this would be a scarier game. I think Florida State's going to win this easily, although I do see them starting off slow after the kind of Miami hangover after a tough game and having to play till the end last week.
Yeah, I think Florida State wins it fairly easily, too. I think Louisville's done for this year. I think FSU really gets their act together and with all cylinders this week.
Yeah, I'm right with you, Mark and Adam. I think this is the week that Florida State wakes up and starts playing. I think they're going to get better. I think they're a threat, and you know, they're undefeated, and so
Dalvin Cook has been incredible.
He's good.
You've watched him at all.
You know, Fournette gets a lot of pub, but his stats are right there with Fournette.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right. Virginia Tech and Miami. I can't figure out either one of these teams. I think I figured out Miami a little bit more, so I'm going to lean to the Hurricane, but not with a lot of conviction.
I agree. I think this is the matchup that the ACC desperately wants to be a national matchup. That's what the ACC needs, is Virginia Tech and Miami to be a prime game in the conference, and it's frankly not. Both teams are somewhat in the tank and heading the wrong way, but I think Miami pulls it out with the running game.
Yeah, I'm with the Hurricanes in this one. I you know, we saw Virginia Tech last week. but I think they got some quarterback problems. I'm not sure which quarterback will play this week.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if Brewer's
but,
ready or not.
I think Miami wins that today.
Yeah. Oklahoma, Kansas State. Again, Oklahoma, Bob Stoops, come back. What's going on? I like Sean Landry's pick for Kansas State. I am siding with the purple jerseys.
You're going with youth, huh? Yeah. I was heartbroken when Kansas State lost last week. They really had that game. But I think Oklahoma pulls it out on the road in the Little Apple. I think Oklahoma comes back and bounces back a little bit stronger than the purple.
Yep, I'm going with OU on this one too. I think Baker Mayfield's good enough to go in there and win this one. So I'm going with them and against the Bill Snyders, the Fighting Bill Snyders. I think Oklahoma wins this. The Stoops, the Fighting Stoops,
Stoops
over the Fighting
the Snyders.
Yeah,
the battle for the mitt. The scowling D'Antonio versus the khaki Harbaugh. Guys, what do you think on this one? This is a good football
it
game.
It is a good football game. Going with Sparty. I think Sparty brings khaki back down to the ground a little bit. I think they go into the big house, and I think they show the rest of the country that they are as good as we thought they were in week two or three.
I got to stay with the Fighting Harbaughs. And,
gosh.
I think it's khaki all over this
game. For a man that doesn't wear khakis, you sure are obsessed with his, Mark.
I think they win this. And actually, I think they win it by 10 points or so, or maybe more.
If Michigan keeps doing what they've done the past three or four weeks, I'm all Dockers. Okay?
Yeah.
This is khaki galore.
With the pleats, huh?
I'm going with the pleats and the slightly askew shirt, and I'm going Michigan.
I think the Michigan offense shows up flat-fronted and they can't play.
I hope you're right. I'm gonna shout out to my brother-in-law in Lansing, and they actually live in Grand Rapids, and they're big Michigan State people. I hope you're right. I hope Michigan State wins
Sparty.
This game. Florida at LSU, the Will Grier thing notwithstanding, I still think LSU wins, and I think they win handily.
Yeah, I would have picked LSU before Grier, to be honest with you, certainly now. I love Les Miles' quote about dusk and what dusk brings, something about dusk brings nighttime with it or something like that. Classic Les Miles quote, so I think LSU rolls.
Yeah, well, this is big boy football, no doubt, for mm-hmm. Les Miles, big mm-hmm. boy football. But, yeah, I'm with LSU, and I agree, Adam. I would have gone with him
absolutely.
If Florida had Will Grier.
And with maybe not quite so big boy football, a 3 o'clock SEC Network game, Vanderbilt at South Carolina. Thank you, Sean Landry, for putting this game in. I am going to go against Sean and say South Carolina here because I think they regroup and win it for HBC.
Yeah, you know, if he was coaching out the rest of the year, I would say USC wins big and wins one for the old ball coach. I think it's going to be closer than it should be. Both teams are a mess, but I think USC pulls out a close, nearly unwatchable football game.
I'm with you. I think it might get really ugly, but I got to go with the home team on that. I'm going with South Carolina.
So you guys are not going to change your dial at any point during the Alabama A&M game over to the SEC Network?
I will have two TVs going on, and I think I'd have to have five TVs going on to just think about switching to this game during commercial breaks.
Yeah, I you know, if somebody brings up Scholar Athletes and it reminds me there's this game on with Vandy, I might take a look. But now I probably won't. Although I will watch it over commercials. That's true, no doubt.
Moving into the evening, Clemson, I know Boston College defense, but I don't think they're a serious threat. I think Clemson moves the ball and wins by maybe 17 over Boston College. Adam?
I agree. Clemsoning is not over. I don't care what Kirk Herbstreit says, but it's not going to happen this week. They're going to win over a tough Boston College defense, but it's not going to be enough. Clemson wins.
I agree. I'm with Dabo and Clemson on this.
But Rutgering is alive and well, by the way.
Right.
USC at Notre Dame. Notre Dame all the way here.
I agree.
It's a train wreck.
Big win in South Bend.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think Notre Dame wins this by quite a few.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Missouri and Georgia. I don't. Why am I intrigued by this? But I think I'm holding on to the idea that Missouri's better than they are, and perhaps they're not. What do you guys have in this one?
I want to pick Missouri. I want them to go into Athens and beat up Georgia, but I don't think they've got what it takes to do it this year. I think Georgia wins in a 10-point game or something like that, 10, 13 points, less than two touchdowns.
I agree. I think Georgia, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Georgia to win this game, of course, but I think they do win it at home. I think Missouri, you know, that after Florida Florida held them to just 3 points last week. Yeah. Georgia doesn't have Florida's defense, but Georgia's got enough at home to take care of this team.
Yeah, I'm clean sweep Georgia all the way. Penn State at Ohio State. Black jerseys of Ohio State make a difference. Maybe, maybe not. I'm going to put Ohio State in the same category as Florida State. This is wake-up time, and I think they're going to be a convincing winner.
I agree. I think Ohio State finally plays an opponent that they get up for. Mm-hmm. I think they're playing at the Shoe at night. It's always easy to get excited about a Penn State matchup. They will be distributing Marsh's Buckeyes at tailgates before the game.
There we go.
Good to know.
So just in case you're around the Shoe, there'll be some out there. But I think Ohio State shows up like the number one team in the country and actually has some people stop talking about Utah for a few minutes, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm with you guys on that Ohio State's going to win. I'm not so sure, though, they're going to go in there and blast them. I think Penn State, you know, there's something about Penn State and just really, you know, overperforming. I don't know what it is, although in the beginning of the year they didn't with Temple, if you remember. But I think now they've kind of found their footing, and I think Ohio State's got some problem there that we're that you know, maybe it's the quarterback controversy still that's and the team chemistry because of that. But I think it's going to be fairly close. Ohio State wins this
game.
They
play each other tough all the time. Yeah. A down Penn State team and a down Ohio State team, they're always tough.
Yeah, and you know, guys, I'm not changing my pick. I'm staying with the Buckeyes. But Hackenberg looked good against Indiana.
Yeah.
And I walked out of that game, and I was watching that with several other Big Ten games that morning, and I thought, wow, they're not bad. So, but I just think there's something about Ohio State getting up against a big game.
I saw a Penn State-Ohio State game in the Shoe at night with Terrell Pryor when Terrell Pryor fumbled the ball away at the end, and that atmosphere is pretty crazy. So I think with as many weapons as Ohio State has, they may get confused at times on offense, but I think that second half of the Maryland game, they really figured it out.
Yeah.
Arizona at Colorado, let's stay out west here, getting the Pac-12. What do we see here?
I'm going Arizona on that one. I just don't think Colorado's got a great team, and I think Arizona, this is one they can win even away.
I agree.
Yeah, me too. They just don't have anything in Colorado, sadly.
Yep.
And so I guess this is a big game because Utah is the number four team in the country this week. Is that right? Somewhere in four or five.
Yep.
Arizona State, the Sun Devils go out to Utah 9 o'clock on ESPN this evening. Gentlemen, do you see an update? An upset?
I don't see one. I think Utah's going to handle them. I think Utah just keeps winning, and I think they've gotten confidence in you know, they had a tough game with Cal last week. I don't think they're going to have as tough game this time with Arizona State. Arizona State can win this game. I know that. But I've got to stay with the Utes on this.
Yeah, I'm with Utah. I've said it all along. I think Willingham's a great coach. I think this is a good team. Whether they're a national championship team, I don't know. But I'm going to go Utah.
I think Utah's been reading press about themselves too much. I think they're going to run out of time here. And I think Arizona State, I think the Sun Devils are going to go in there to Utah and beat them.
All right.
I absolutely do.
That's fearless in this room. All right. Okay, that's our picks for the rest of the SEC and around the nation. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Bama Texas A&M picks. You're listening to Skybox on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hi, this is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Skybox on 90.7 The Capstone. Well, Adam and George, it's a big day in College Station for Alabama against the Aggies today. So what are we looking at?
Well, I think we're looking at a tough game, to be honest with you. It feels to me like a shootout with their quarterback and ours. And as I said going into the Georgia game, a quarterback shootout is where I feel the least comfortable in a game. I felt better with a running game against running game kind of game that I thought we were going into in wet Athens. And clearly Coker had to make some throws in that game for sure, but I definitely prefer a run first, pass later game for us. I think that they're going to try to throw the ball a lot. I think that our defense certainly can handle it, but I do think this matchup is one of our tougher matchups of the season thus far.
Yeah, I agree. It's the hurry up, no huddle is. It's not the same A&M team that Manziel had.
True.
And for that, I think that they're. I'm kind of on along lines with Sean Landry that I think this is a team that, because of the way we've adjusted with the speed of our linebackers, I think our secondary continues to get better and better. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned. I'm very, very concerned. I think this game was circled along with mm-hmm. Georgia for some time.
Yep.
Fortunately, we got through Georgia. I think how well we play early, A&M's going to be extremely hyped coming off the 59-0 and knowing that they're top 10 ranked. But I think if we can weather the early storm, certainly not get down a couple of scores, I'm cautiously optimistic of the outcome. But the speed of A&M, the Arkansas game, that's a common opponent. Mm-hmm. You know, it was overtime for them. And I don't think they were convincing. I know it was in Fayetteville, and I understand all that. But I thought we dominated Arkansas in a way that A&M never did. So
yes.
I'm doing comparables here. Maybe the transitive property shouldn't be in play here. But I still think that there are some things that maybe tell me this is not the hurry-up, no-huddle team that we should be so frightened of in years past.
I agree. I do think, as you said, though, George, it's been circled for a while, this game. I've been worried as a Bama fan, you know, in this game in terms of it's the kind of team that gives Alabama fits in some mm-hmm. respects. These other teams Bama has played lately, Georgia and Arkansas, are the kind of teams that Alabama can handle, particularly with what I think is the best defensive line in college football. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, Sumlin is an outstanding offensive football coach. He now has a very good defense to go with, or certainly an improved defense to go with what we knew would be a good offense. So it's a challenge for Alabama. Also, A&M's a tough place to play
yeah.
with the 12th man thing and all that. So I think it's going to be a big challenge. Alabama's gotten used to playing teams like this, though, over the last couple of years. You know, we talk about Bama being sort of built for pro-style running teams, but they're also getting, you know, they have recruited to this kind of offense as well that they have to face. The other thing is, I think Alabama, I'm anxious to see how Coker does in this game.
Yeah.
Because I think the fact that now he's really getting a body of work behind him and you know, he's looked great and he's looked not so great. I think he's going to have to throw downfield more than he has with more accuracy. And I think they're going to do that. I think Calvin Ridley's going to be called on to open things up for Bama's running game. I think they're going to throw to Ridley and try to back A&M off and give Henry and Drake some room to run. And I think Alabama's offense is going to actually present some problems for A&M.
I think it could be similar to Arkansas in that we go into the half on kind of shaky ground. We go into the half tied. We go into the half down by 3 or 7 points. And we have to make some adjustments at half and come out and really blow out the second half throwing the ball. I think that's how we win the game is through a kind of even first half. They're going to be hyped, like you said, George. They're going to come out strong, and we're going to have to match that. And I think we just have to hold it down and keep it under a couple of scores so that way we can make some adjustments in the second half and Coker can come out and make some big throws. And hopefully we can run the ball in the fourth quarter and establish our style of game. But I think it's going to be a little shaky for the first half.
Yeah, the intrigue for me is Kiffin's offensive composition against the Chavis defense. Mm-hmm. This is such an improved defense from A&M. It's night and day better, which I think is the unusual part of the equation for me. I will say that Lane Kiffin has impressed me most with the way he's done adjustments, that he has figured out the Achilles heel of a given defense. And sometimes it takes the third or fourth quarter to do that. Arkansas, it really was midway third when he got Ridley deep and Coker hit him on a nice lead ball. First time he's really led a player that I thought yeah. put the ball where he needed to put it. I'm cautiously optimistic that this is the kind of play calling that we need. I guess I'm curious to you guys, do we set up the run to open the pass, or do we set up the pass to open Derek and the running game a little bit more there? Which way do we go in terms of lead?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I have a feeling we're going to come out throwing the football.
Mm.
I think just to – we'll see. Obviously, I think events over this season have proven that Bama needs to run Derrick Henry
mm-hmm.
A lot. But I think out there in a kind of – not a kind of, a really hostile environment, I think they're going to try to open it up a little bit in the beginning. I wouldn't be surprised to see Bama, you know, Coker go back and try to hit Ridley on the first play. That's the kind of thing Kiffin might do. Not sure about it. But also, though, I don't think this is going to be a shootout like it was out there last time when they had Manziel. I think this is going to be a more defensive battle than normal Alabama A&M games. Obviously, last year's game, Alabama just blew them out here. That was, you know, that was a different kind of ball game for Alabama. We're not going to see that. But I like Alabama in this game. I think they're going to handle this.
I do think we throw to open up the run. My question is going to be is if it doesn't work so well, do we stick with it? Or do we get scared real quick and start running, and that's how we go into halftime, down by three, down by right. 10, something like that. And so that's what I get afraid of sometimes is that we don't just stick with it and we're going to flip-flop and lose that identity that we seem to have found over the last couple of weeks for sure.
What do we feel about the special teams? I'm encouraged by Scott's punting seems to be better.
Yep,
I'm still a
better.
Little bit concerned. I mean, Griffin's leg is not in question, guys. Griffin's got distance. It's the accuracy between
right.
the posts. I fear that we're going to have a good special teams effort. Punt return, kick return, punting, field placement.
We can't lay the ball down on a punt or a kickoff for sure. And so we can't lay any more punts down. And the leg is a question, you're right, as far as accuracy. But you know, I think we go into it realizing that we're not going to get a lot of easy threes, but we've got to go into it not laying the ball on the ground on punt returns. We just can't do it.
Well, there's no doubt, though, that Adam Griffith, it's mental right now in his head. Because, you know, he does have the foot. He can do this. But I think at this point it's going to be really key for Bama to get a lead early out there. It could be ugly in the first half. I think the game plan is going to be try to win the toss and take the ball.
Yeah.
I think they're going to try to score. Mm.
You think we win the toss, you get the ball, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Because if we won a toss yet this year, we're terrible.
We did.
We
won the toss against Arkansas.
That was our first one of the year.
Yeah, and that was a little different because it was a different, you know, it was home and we deferred. But I think this one we take the ball and try to get a lead and quiet the crowd. I think we're going to see some pretty good play calling on that first Bama drive, or at least an attempt at not being conservative. Obviously, though, it's key that Derrick Henry run this football well.
Yeah. I agree.
It's key for all.
The line has to open holes for Derrick. Derrick's got to have a step to get an edge
and
get in and do it.
It does.
Then let number two go from there. It's time for the pick and maybe even a score. Adam, what do you think?
I think we win it. I think Bama wins, but I think it's relatively close. I think it's a 10-point or less win.
Okay. Mark?
I think Bama wins it. I think they win this. I think they pull out of this in the fourth quarter and win it by about 17 or 20, 21 points.
Wow.
I really do. I think they're going to.
Sean had a big score in that
one
as well. I'm going to be a little bit more cautious. Alabama 28-24. I think we win. Not late. I think A&M may score to make it closer, but I do think it's going to be a close football game.
I will say quickly, George, you actually picked the exact score of Bama Arkansas.
I did. You really?
27-14.
So yeah, that late score got
me.
I
can't
Vegas.
Argue with you on the score. Well, guys, we're all for Bama. That'll do it for another Skybox show. We want to thank our executive producer, Terry Siggers, who's also GM of 90.7 The Capstone. And thanks also to Melanie Veering, our wonderful marketing intern. Thanks also to our great guests today, Ken Gaddy and Sean Landry. As always, we'll see you back here on the radio next Saturday. Until then, have a great day, a great weekend of college football. Great Saturday here, and roll tide.
Roll tide, everybody. Happy Saturday.